The CHI Files, the ultimate Bears podcast.
Welcome aboard. I'm your host, Sean Drotar, and with week four in the books, it's time to take a spin around the NFL and tackle the biggest stories with the coach, Brian Billick, joining us as he does every week to share his special insights regarding what happened last weekend and what's to come this weekend. And today in this week's Rapid Fire Overtime segment, the Monday morning quarterback himself, Peter King, will join us. But as always, we start with the big interview. So let's get to it.
The big interview.
Joining us today to talk about the Chicago Bears from the Rock River Times in Rockford and the Windy City Gridiron, family of SB Nation sites, Robert Zaglinski. How are you doing today, Robert?
I'm doing well, sir. How are you?
We're doing okay out here in NFL Files land, but we wanted to check in on the Bears who, well, let's face it, surprised a little bit by knocking off the Lions, getting their first win of the season, and doing it by limiting the Lions to a rather, for them, underwhelming 14 points. What was the changes that you saw with the Bears? Obviously, we know they're going with Brian Hoyer as Jay Cutler's hurt, Jordan Howard now taking over Jeremy Langford. This is already something of a different Bears offense than the one the season started with.
Yeah, I think offensive coordinator Dowell Loggins, he implemented more of a game plan that more suited to this team. Let the defense take control of the game. They only allowed 6 points. And a grind-it-out style offensively with your quarterback occasionally letting your receivers make plays, and it played out that way. I'm not sure how great 17 points is against the Lions, but it was enough to come out with the win.
Yeah, that's a fair point. The Lions haven't exactly been outstanding on the defensive side this year. But Hoyer was efficient. Only 8 incomplete passes, 302 yards, the 2 touchdowns, sacked twice, no turnovers through the air. That's obviously a big thing that's going to be important for the Bears going forward with their offense. They can't afford those kind of mistakes and give teams the short field. On the receiving side, Alshon Jeffrey is generally pretty blanketed. Was again here, the 3 catches, 46 yards. You'd love to get him with a little more action than that, but sometimes you have to take what the defense gives them. Zach Miller was pretty good, got the touchdown out of his 3 catches. And then Eddie Royal turned back the clock a little bit. 7 catches for 111 and a touchdown. They may need more from Royal because now the word is that Kevin White is going back on the IR with another injury to his leg.
Yeah, and that's a disappointing setback for the Bears. White, through 4 games, had 19 receptions, was leading the Bears in target, leading the Bears in reception. It's the most by a Bears receiver ever through his first 4 games, which, again, that's not exactly a high bar to set, but it's still something to note. So the offense will basically trickle around. They do have Marquise Wilson coming off the physically unable to perform list soon. So things aren't as bad as they seem. It's more recency bias, but for White, it's really the worst setback.
Well, on the bright side with the running game, you look at Jordan Howard there, and Royal played well, so they might be able to do something there. But at the running side, Jordan Howard, as a rookie, came in and really impressed. Now, this is a big guy, 230. Yeah, he can thump, and he can make sure that you can do some things with them down at the goal line. 111 yards, the 23 carries, that's almost 5 yards a carry, and now he gets to go up against a Colts defense that really is not particularly good against the run. The Colts defense also not good. Is there an opportunity here for the Bears, despite all the bumps and bruises that they've endured over the course of this season already, to maybe start to turn it around with their schedule facing now a Colts team that isn't terribly good, a Jaguars team that isn't terribly good? Could they find themselves at 3-3 and back in the mix?
Absolutely. I really think they can. I think both teams' flaws are suited to be able to take advantage of the Bears. The Bears are getting healthier defensively. Soon they'll have Danny Trevathan didn't participate today, the middle linebacker, but he'll be back soon. Pernell McPhee is slated to come back as well off of the physically unable to form list. Eddie Goldman's high ankle sprain, he's recovering from that, is getting better. And as long as they can employ the kind of offensive game plan they had against Detroit where they're giving the ball to their budding young star Howard, as you mentioned, 111 yards and 23 carries, and they're just letting the Brian Hoyer, whoever's the quarterback, play the offense within themselves, they'll have a chance against bad teams. I've always thought that this is kind of how the season would go. I didn't think they would be winless the first 3 games, but I thought the season would be determined
basically by their upcoming national slate against the Packers on Thursday Night Football in Week 7 and against Minnesota at home Monday Night Football in Week 8. So everything's setting up well for them to have that be the determining factor.
If you get Trevathan back, this defense gets a little certainly more dynamic and interesting. They were able to pick Matthew Stafford off twice on the game before, and he limited him pretty dramatically. Really, you know, 213 yards on 36 attempts. They took away a lot of what he wanted to do, and that's not terribly easy. Detroit's got a pretty good receiving core, even without Calvin Johnson. They can do some things. So what did you see out of the Bears defense that you had not seen in the previous games that they can build upon?
I think the Bears have a nice little corner bevy of corner, young corners that they can rely on. DeAndre Hall, fourth-round pick this year. Kobe Glenn, an undrafted player from last season. Bryce Callahan, a guy at nickel who's showing a lot of physicality. He's really flashing on tape. They have a nice little core developing here, and those guys were kind of really the reason that Lions receivers were thrown off the mark. You mentioned the two picks. Glenn had one of Stafford and Hall had the other. A lot of people surrounding this team thought secondary would be a huge weakness of this defense, and it's actually turning out to be their strength at the moment, considering that the Bears only have 7 sacks. They're not really generating a lot of pass rush, and the corners are still playing well, while occasionally making the obvious young player mistakes.
Now, John Fox has talked about the quarterback situation with Brian Hoyer, with Jay Cutler, and said it is a performance-based thing. Now, we understand Cutler's got a big contract. After this season, there is an opportunity for the Bears to cut him loose and go a different direction, free up a lot of money there. And it's hard for me, at least, to see a long-term future for Jay Cutler in Chicago. So if that is not the case, and that doesn't mean that they need to stick with Cutler, basically, because they're worried about something long-term, which quarterback would you end up going with, knowing that both of these guys aren't really tied to the Bears? Is it Hoyer or is it Cutler?
I still have to go Cutler, and I absolutely agree with you. After this season, the Bears will only have $2 million committed. If they cut Cutler, they will have only $2 million in dead cap space. But that doesn't mean a 30-year-old journeyman Brian Hoyer, who is a journeyman for a reason and has limitations passing, doesn't mean he's the better option to not give you the best chance to win this season. The Bears aren't going to be a playoff team this year, but that doesn't mean they shouldn't deliberately handicap their team. Now, Jay Cutler, he'll make the occasional mistake, obviously, but he can stretch the field. He gives this offense a dimension they don't really have. Even on, say, Eddie Royal's 64-yard reception against the Lions on Sunday, most of that's yards after the catch. That's not necessarily Hoyer creating something. I'd really love to see Cutler in with this offensive game plan, this new balanced offensive game plan, and see where the Bears can go from here and maybe even surprise some people.
Well, there are some numbers that back you up. Brian Hoyer has basically thrown the ball downfield more than 15 yards, only 11 times this year. He's only completed 2 of those. And you're right, the ones that have gone for any decent distance have been mostly yards after the catch. And they've mostly been to Zach Miller and Eddie Royal underneath. So if they want to get Alshon Jeffrey back in gear, it does look like Jay Cutler needs to find a way to be the answer. When do you think that will be?
When Cutler is healthy. He did not practice today, so that is not a good indicator that he'll start Sunday. It looks like Brian Hoyer, in all likelihood, will start Sunday, but they obviously won't have the official update and injury report until Friday. But he did not practice today, and that's on the Bears' hump day, typical full practice, full go session. So that's not a good sign.
Well, they are reeling with injuries, these Chicago Bears, but they finally got the first win. And sometimes that shakes something loose. Their schedule breaks favorably, and we will see where they go. You can follow Robert at Robert Zeglinski, that is Zeglinski, on Twitter. And, of course, you can catch him on SB Nation's Windy City Gridiron. And then if you're out in Illinois, at Rockford, he's part of the Rock River Times as the Bears beat writer. Robert, thank you so much for your time and your insight. This has been a challenging team to cover. Hopefully things start to turn around and at least make that beat a little bit more fun.
Absolutely. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. We will be back on the other side with the coach, Brian Billick.
around the league.
And now it's time for the coach, Brian Billick, who's brought to you by SeatGeek. Visit SeatGeek.com or download the SeatGeek app. Make sure you and your family are getting the best deal on sports and concert tickets every time with SeatGeek. Coach, when you use SeatGeek, what makes that so great?
Well, it's got too many things to cover in just one show. I mean, the great thing is the how broad-based in terms of the different ticket agencies that it brings together for you. You're going to get the best choice. You're going to see exactly where the seats are. You're going to get a rating on how good a deal this is. And most importantly, every transaction is guaranteed by SeatGeek.
Well, I know I use it, and if you use it as well, you can now today use the promo code Billick, and then you'll get $20 back on your first purchase with the SeatGeek app. So do what I do. Do what the coach does. Use SeatGeek. Make sure you get your family the best seats for concerts, sports, and everything else that you can go enjoy. Coach, this is another fascinating week in the NFL, as it always is. But I'll start with the most recent game, the Monday night game last night. We watched the Minnesota Vikings leap to still continue their run. They're now 4-0. There have been essentially a surprise for everybody, in as much as the pieces seem to keep falling off the car here and there, but the car keeps going at full speed. You know, what kind of job are they getting done up there in Minnesota? It's extremely impressive.
Yeah, spectacular, and it's because you can base it on defense. This is, for my money, maybe the best defense in the National Football League. They're built right, a dominant front seven, a secondary that doesn't give up big plays. That was the thing last night that jumped out at you, and you knew it was going to be a problem for the New York Giants. They had one big play, the big 67-yarder that they were able to hit, and that was it. You have to try to generate some big plays particularly when you're going to go on the road. And then Minnesota, although not overwhelmingly on offense, but were able to, you know, kind of keep the drives alive. They were 8 of 16 on third down, so they kind of kept the drives alive. They did not turn the ball over. Sam Bradford was excellent that way. And they got just enough out of the running game, which they stuck with 30-plus carries for over 100 yards, that the Giants just couldn't combat that on the road. That's going to be the formula that Minnesota will win with all year long.
Looking over at the NFC East now that the Giants lost that game, they are at 2-2. They started out well, and I think people thought that maybe this was going to all fit for them going over the season. Now they've lost to everybody else in the divisions on a winning streak. Philly, of course, still leads now with the bye week. They're still unbeaten at 3-0. But there isn't a team with a losing record. Now, we're only four games in, but have we underestimated the NFC East, or has this been something of a beneficiary of the schedule?
Yeah, to a degree. We'll see when they start really taking each other on. We're going to find out about the Philadelphia Eagles, who right now look pretty darn good. I mean, when you look at what happened over the weekend, how impressive is Pittsburgh and what they did to Kansas City? Well, what does that tell us about Philadelphia, who beat them last week and held them to 3 points? How good are, by way of example as well, the Oakland Raiders, who we were kind of dismissive of the fact because they lost at home to Atlanta. They go on the road and beat an undefeated Baltimore team. How good does that tell us Atlanta is? So, you know, you can draw some comparisons. Philadelphia's for real. We're going to find out going forward just how much for real. And the Dallas Cowboys, again, the schedule has not been that taxing for them. But by the same token, you know, they've looked pretty darn good with a rookie quarterback and a rookie running back. That they lead the league in third down conversions and they've got the top runner in the National Football League. So, yeah, particularly with New York and Dallas, these teams are for real. Washington still seems to be trying to get its footing. Don't know about them, and we'll see. You know, obviously they have a chance to continue to get better as we move along here. But the division looks very, very good. But I don't know that there's any dominating teams in it. Outside, we'll see how good Philly is. But I don't know that there is any dominating team or division in the NFC right now.
Let's take a look over at those Steelers in the AFC. Now they got Le'Veon Bell back, and you could see what a difference that makes. Pittsburgh's offense essentially just rolled, and this is something that they can do. You saw Le'Veon Bell line up even as a wide receiver for more than a few snaps to make sure that they mix things up and were able to still use D'Angelo Williams, give the Chiefs a lot of different looks. When you look at the AFC now with Pittsburgh kind of being all together again, Pittsburgh, New England, Houston, all leading their divisions at 3-1, Denver at 4-0. Which of these are contenders, and which of these maybe still have a little bit of work to do to get that way?
Well, I think they're all contenders. Denver playing great defense and running the ball, and notwithstanding the quarterback position, but they both, Paxton Lynch looked very calm when he went in. Trevor Siemian obviously has played very solid. The Pittsburgh Steelers still remain to me, you know, this could be a truly dominant team. But here they're a week removed from losing 34-3 to the Philadelphia Eagles. So we still have some sorting out to do. We're only at the quarter mark. We'll know more at the halfway mark, obviously. And for the Steelers coming up, this week they're going to play the Jets. How real are the Jets? Another team that a couple weeks ago, me included, were saying, wow, this team is a Super Bowl caliber team. Now they can't even get out of their way, having 9 turnovers, 9 interceptions in the last 2 games. But we're going to find out about the Steelers because they're going to play the Jets. They have to go to Miami, and it's always tough going down into Miami to play. And then they're going to play the New England Patriots and the Baltimore Ravens. So we're going to know by the midway point just how real and consistent the Pittsburgh Steelers are. Was that 34-3 beat down by the Philadelphia Eagles the proverbial wake-up call, or was it an indicator that maybe there are still some chinks in the armor?
Well, one of the teams that you mentioned also earlier that surprised, I think, a lot of folks, the Atlanta Falcons are 3-1. There is an impression that maybe they're doing it with smoke and mirrors to an extent. They lost that opening game to Tampa Bay when Jameis Winston just looked electric, and he hasn't looked the same since. But they're averaging almost 40 points a game. That's probably not sustainable. But given the shootouts they've been in, you wonder if that's almost what they're going to have to do to keep winning. So if you're the Atlanta Falcons, what do you do to keep everything rolling, knowing that you probably can't, barring something very strange, keep putting up 40 a game?
Yeah, well, the most impressive thing to me is the fact that the wins they've gotten on the road at Oakland and New Orleans. I know New Orleans isn't a great team, but still a tough place to play. And then a very physical Carolina Panthers team, and to win the way they did with Matt Ryan having a record year, he's on pace to just blow away. 2012 was his best year. We had 4,700 yards, and I think it was 36 touchdowns, something like that. He's on pace to just blow that away. You're right; it's unrealistic to think they're going to stay at this pace. But with Devontae Freeman in the backfield, with Mohamed Sanu opposite the receiver, they're, and the offensive line playing very well, this is a very legitimate offensive group. Now, defensively, you know, they may have to score 40 points a game because defensively, I think they still may struggle a little bit. Remember, now they did give up 33 points to Carolina and 32 points to New Orleans. Now, that's Drew Brees and Cam Newton. I get that, but they also gave up 28 points to the Oakland Raiders and 31 points to Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I think they're still struggling defense. The key is, can they increase their pass rush ability a little bit, get a little bit better that way? But I think this is a team that certainly can be a factor.
The Patriots have Tom Brady back in action this week. They play the Browns, who are winless. This doesn't look like a real good matchup for the Browns, but it looks like a great place for Tom Brady to kickstart his 2016 campaign. Do you expect any sort of growing pains or any sort of wobbliness coming back, or is Brady and Belichick, is this a well-oiled enough machine that it's going to look like he never left?
Oh, no, yeah, more of the latter, although there may be some hiccups on the way. I look at this like a Broadway play. You know, what do? You take it out of town to get it up to snuff, and you bring it back to town into New York. Well, this is their off-Broadway, out-of-town debut, good place to go, play a Cleveland team. I don't know. I mean, the football gods just, I don't know what they have against the Cleveland Browns. You know, the tight losses they've had, and now they've got to take on the New England Patriots. Oh, by the way, Tom Brady coming back. Tough combination. Obviously a good team for New England to open with on the road, kind of, get the, dust off the rust, so to speak. And I imagine it'll be a game plan that's heavy. Cleveland's near last in the league, or one of the worst teams in the league against the run, so I imagine we're going to see a lot of LeGarrette Blount, let Tom Brady get his feet underneath him. And so then when they come back, we'll see exactly after, because, they got some interesting games after this, and they're obviously poised for it, most, not the least of which, they're going to play the Cincinnati Bengals. They got to play the Pittsburgh Steelers at Pittsburgh. And then they get to go back at those Buffalo Bills who they just lost to. So they're gonna be challenged coming up, but I'm sure they're excited about it.
Well, we've been talking about the good thing teams have been doing, and there's a lot of those stories around the league, but one of the ones that stands out is a team that's not getting it done, and that is the Arizona Cardinals, now 1-3. Carson Palmer in the concussion protocol. They have a Thursday night football game coming up. On the surface, it doesn't look like there's that much wrong with the Cardinals, but something is obviously off kilter, Coach. What are you seeing?
Well, they're a little like the Carolina Panthers. I was talking all day yesterday on my shows for the NFL Network. People say, okay, what's wrong with the Carolina Panthers? And when you look at them, they're not far off. I mean, they're not running the ball quite as well as last year. They're not quite as good on third down. They're not quite as explosive. Defensively, they're not quite as dynamic. They're good, but not quite what we saw last year. And you add all those up, and all of a sudden now, that means some losses. The Arizona Cardinals appear the same way. They just don't seem to be as good as they were last year. Still solid, but not good enough, obviously, to get a win. And now they've played a couple good teams here. The New England Patriots, obviously, Buffalo in a little bit of a role. The Rams, it's always a tough defensive struggle with the Rams. But yeah, I'm not quite sure what's going to have to happen. The offensive line's going to have to step up. They're going to have to start getting down the field a little bit more with that gifted receiving core they have. And that front seven in particular, the defense needs to start showing up and doing the things that it did last year in terms of putting pressure on the quarterback and stuffing the running game.
He is the coach, Brian Billick, and you can use that same last name, Billick, on the SeatGeek app right now and get $20 back on your first purchase with the SeatGeek app. Coach, thank you so much for the insight. We'll catch you next week.
Sounds good.
Coming up next, we'll go into overtime with Peter King.
Overtime.
This week, we're delighted to be joined by Peter King, editor-in-chief of MMQB.com. That's Monday Morning Quarterback, the site that's become synonymous with the best and deepest NFL coverage anywhere. Peter's brought to us by SeatGeek, because it's football season. The NFL and college football are in full swing. Baseball's playoffs are upon us, so be sure to visit SeatGeek.com and download the SeatGeek app for all the best ticket deals. Remember, the NHL and NBA seasons are on the horizon, too, so make sure you and your family are getting the best deals for the most exciting sporting events every time with SeatGeek. How are you doing today, Peter?
Everything's going great. Thank you for hosting me today. This is going to be fun.
Our pleasure. Well, I'll go with a couple quick ones for you. We'll start right here. Odell Beckham Jr. suggested that he's being targeted by officials after his three-catch, 23-yard performance on Monday Night Football. Do the Zebras really let defenders have their way with him more than any other receiver?
No, but that was a marginal call against the Minnesota Vikings that Xavier Rhodes could have been flagged for hitting Beckham out of bounds. But my feeling is that once you start to get this paranoia that the league is against you, that the officials are against you, I think Odell Beckham needs to understand that every official in this league is judged on every call he makes. And if he goes over the line on Odell Beckham Jr. to either call something against him or to do something out of the ordinary against one player, A, he's not going to get any playoff assignments. B, he's not going to be in the league for very long. So I think most of that is a figment of Odell Beckham's imagination.
Well, let's stick with wide receivers. Josh Gordon will stay on the reserve suspended list after saying he would enter rehab. And that seems like the right thing for him. I don't think there's any question about that. And while there's no need for the Browns to move on immediately, is this relationship irrevocably damaged?
I think the Browns, especially the current iteration of the front office and coaching staff, I had invested so much time and energy, and basically it's about the fourth major stumble that he's had, Josh Gordon has had. And my feeling is that at this point, especially when you're trying to build a program, you are getting ready to have him come onto your team after being let back in football by the NFL after his year-long suspension. And you have to ask yourself, why are we in this business? Are we in this business to try to get somebody off the substances that have bedeviled him for most of his adult life? Or are we in here to win football games? Well, I think most teams would say, maybe one, two, or three strikes, okay, we can take it from a great player, but no matter how great he is, at some point, we got to pull the plug. In my opinion, the Browns have reached that point. I don't know if they are going to, get rid of him after he finishes this rehab, but in my opinion, they should.
coming off their shocking shutout win over the Patriots, the Bills coach Rex Ryan said that he was, quote, BSing about having sources that tipped him off about Jacoby Brissett starting a quarterback. Now, with Rex, you know there's a lot of gamesmanship. Is this just fun, or does this maybe start to undermine the trust between the Bills, Ryan, and the media that covers him?
I mean, anybody who I heard, I read his transcript from the press conference where he claimed to know what was going on with the Patriots. There's no way he was going to know what goes on with the Patriots. There's no way he's going to know who's going to start for the Patriots. He says that almost in a comedic way, and it's just part of his shtick. I mean, maybe it's because I've known Ryan for a long time, and I've listened to him for a long time, but he's one of those coaches that about 85% of what he says, I think, just goes in one ear and out the other because a lot of it is so silly. So I just don't think it matters. And I don't think that we ought to be taking seriously when he gets on the conference call and asks Julian Edelman, hey, Julian Waltzatulski from the Buffalo News, are you playing quarterback this week? I mean, it's a shtick. It's fun. So I don't think it's to be taken very seriously.
Well, keeping in the taking maybe a little gamesmanship being taken seriously, Josh Norman really went after the Carolina Panthers after their loss this season, needling them, saying, quote, you get what you pay for. Now, obviously, they parted ways with him in the offseason in one of sort of the most bizarre and notable stories in the offseason. How badly did the Panthers realistically now regret that decision?
Well, I know Dave Gettleman quite well. He's general manager of the Panthers, and I can tell you pretty categorically that Dave Gettleman does not regret the decision. And in fact, you know, let's think about, I just looked this up yesterday. You know, let's think about the Carolina Panthers right now and what they've done so far this year. Their defense in the first three games of the year allowed 307, 302, and 211 net yards. And so that is not, it's not the defense's fault what's going on. Now, they got shredded by the Atlanta Falcons on Sunday. So everybody is going to say, clearly, their defense, you know, the rush isn't there. They don't cover as well, blah, blah, blah. And in my opinion, I talked to Julio Jones after this game. I really think that a part of the problem was in the game plan, was in how they defended Julio Jones. Because in a lot of ways, they singled Julio Jones, his 77 or 75 yard touchdown, whatever it was. Ben Wickery didn't have any help until he was too far gone. So I just look at this and I say we can't really be prisoners of the moment. They had a really bad defensive game, but they just simply don't believe in paying a cornerback $15 million or $14 million, whatever it was. And so far, since Gettleman has gotten there, he's been proven right in his personnel acumen. We'll see how this pans out, but no, I don't think they're second-guessing themselves over it.
Last one, Peter. The first-round pick, Paxton Lynch, played well at quarterback in relief of the injured Trevor Siemian in Denver's easy win over Tampa. Broncos coach Gary Kubiak stated unequivocally that Siemian would remain the starter. Now, is that the right choice, or is it just the safe one?
It's the right choice. I think Gary Kubiak loved the intelligence and the decision-making of Trevor Siemian, and he's got better arm than people give him credit for. So I think that Trevor Siemian not only has done nothing to lose this job, but he's really, in the last, whatever, six quarters that he played, he was a huge factor in helping his team win. So I think this absolutely is the right decision. You don't make a replacement at a position on the field unless you are trying to make your team better. Benching a healthy enough Trevor Siemian would be making this team worse.
Brought to you by SeatGeek. He's the one and only Peter King. Be sure to follow him on Twitter at @SI_PeterKing and visit MMQB.com for the most insightful NFL coverage on a daily basis. Thanks for your time, Peter.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That's the final gun, and it's a wrap for now, but be sure to check all the archives posted at audioboom.com. Search for NFL Files. Check out all the podcasts for every team in the league, because we cover them all. My name is Sean Drotar, and you can follow me on Twitter at sdrotar. That's S-D-R-O-T-A-R. We'll catch you next week.
This has been a Sports Joe production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsjoe.com.